good morning, honorable members. Good morning, the delegation from CIFA Economic Development, SAMA, school. Yeah, everything. My name is Chris Ntoli. I've been delegated by the chairperson of this committee, which is Mrs. Coleman, just to keep the ball rolling. The chairperson is away. He has been sent to China for a summit, but she requested that I chair this session for this week until she comes back. With those few words, you are welcome. I hope we all know that we are going to be briefed by CIFA on behalf of Kula and SAMAF on their annual report and their financial report. I will start by introducing the portfolio committee members. As I've said, I'm Chris Ntoli, who is the whip of this committee, who's been given this task of sharing. Next to me, on my left, it's Comrade X Mabasa, the member of this committee. Next to Mabasa, it's Comrade S. Ngonyama, representing COPE. But he has told me that he's coming back to represent the ANC. And next to him is next to him is next to him is Mansu, representing the ANC. Next to her it's Anne Qabaza, representing the ANC. Next to Qabaza, it's M. Usengwa, representing the IFP. And he also known, and he is also looking forward to. That is our committee secretary on the far right, who is managing the affairs of this committee. Next to me is Mbelekwane, Ms. Mbelekwane, the researcher of the committee. We'll introduce others when they come. Oh, we've got our study group secretary there on there, which is Ms. Petersi. With those few words, I'll give to the leader of the delegation to do the ritual by introducing themselves, and then they tell us who is leading the delegation and then how are they going to present. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Saul Levine from the Economic Development Department, and we are accompanied by representatives from IDC and CIFA, comprising former members of SAMAF and CULA, and they'll be presenting their annual reports today. Just a few words before I hand over to them to do the presentation. During the period that is covered during this for this annual report, it was the merger of CULA and SAMAF to create CIFA, which was driven by the Economic Development Department. During that period, there was an intervention that was required in terms of the CEO positions, because both CULA and SAMAF had vacancies in that post. And the IDC had stepped in to assist us, and had seconded Vili Fari on my right, and Lonnie over there, who are both from IDC and have now both returned to IDC. So they've gone back to the institution. The IDC has again taken its role seriously as a new shareholder of CIFA and has assisted with seconding a new CEO for CIFA, and that person is with us today, and that's Takani Makuva, and he's in the middle here. He's joined only on the 1st of November, so he's only a few days old, and he comes with a strong background in accountancy, finance, banking, and risk management, and he's got exposure to the small business sector when he worked at NSICA, which is the precursor to CEDA. And as EDD, we're confident that he'll be able to give strong leadership, and he has good experience in the core business of CEFA, and we'll hand over to him shortly. From the side of the department, the performance of both Kula and SAMAC was adequate, but it was clear that more needs to be done. That said, the performance of SAMAC was still significantly improved, and we'll hear the results later this morning. But we are looking forward to CEFA bringing a marked shift in performance, and we hope to be able to present the CEFA corporate plan to the committee in the very near future. And key issues that will come over today is that there was an unqualified audit for both institutions, and they'll talk to that, and also the Kula Direct pilot, which forms a key product for the new established CEFA. Let me hand over to Takani, who will introduce the rest of the delegation. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Chairman, Honourable Chairman and Honourable Members. We are today here presenting the annual report for the predecessor of the new entity, Small Enterprise Finance Agency, and that being Kula Finance, as well as SAMF. I know that now, as part of this presentation, there might be instances where the honorable members might also want just to get a feel as to where this new organization is going, and we'll be able to entertain that towards the end of the presentation. Without further ado, Honorable Chairperson, let me introduce the team. Willy Fori, on my left, was the acting CEO of both Kula and CIFA until the 30th of October. And then on my immediate left is the Chief Financial Officer of CIFA, Andile Ramabunga. And then on my immediate right is the Regional Manager of Limpopo Province for CIFA, Patrick Matoma. And then thereafter is Loni Mamatela, who was the acting CEO of SAMAF, as indicated. And then we also have our colleague from our finance department, the finance manager, Ukulita Miyataza, today. So how the proceeding will unfold, Honorable Chairperson, Willy Fori will take us through the annual report for Kula, assisted by Andile, and then Loni Mamatela will take us through the annual report for SAMAF. Thank you.
I think we have to proceed, as we have said. We start with the Kula.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning to you and the honourable members. I'm reporting on the financial year ended 31st of March 2012 for Kula. It was a particularly difficult year for ex-Kula staff, with a lot of changes, very little stability in terms of leadership, and also obviously the uncertainties around the merger, which has now come to fruition. But nonetheless, the staff stood up well, and I think the performance was not bad under the circumstances. I'll take you through the Kula vision, mission, and values. We'll look at an overview of 2011 and 12's activities, talk a bit about Kula Direct and the implementation thereof, and then my colleague Andile will take you through the financial results of Kula for that year, and then I'll make some concluding remarks. Just remember that we're talking here about Kula. It's been superseded by CIFA in the meantime. Kula's vision was to be the development finance partner of first choice in the field of SME development. Its mission was to provide finance, mentorship services, small business premises to SMEs through a network of partnerships and to encourage sustainable development of SMEs whilst ensuring the financial viability of the institution. Its values were around entrepreneurship, efficiency, innovation, and approachability. The products and services of Kula, business loans to retail financial intermediaries who would then on-lend those funds to SMEs, credit indemnities where Kula assisted SMEs who would not otherwise be able to access commercial bank funding by indemnifying such funding to a certain extent, not necessarily 100%, it was around 80%. Joint ventures where Kula partnered with the private and public sector to finance such SMEs. Funds where Kula and other partners would put money into a fund. The fund would be managed by an independent or experienced fund manager, would not necessarily contribute own capital to the fund. Direct lending, which was launched during the year under review to SMEs, and I'll talk a bit more about that later. The mentorship program, where Kula provided mentors for both pre- and post-loan interventions, as well as capacity building of the financial intermediaries. Kula had an agreement with the Institute of Business Advisors of Southern Africa to manage the database of mentors. And then the properties, we'll speak a bit more about the properties later on. It's mostly industrial and retail properties located in previously disadvantaged areas, providing operating space for small entrepreneurs at discounted rates. The footprint quickly, those blue dots, the bigger round one, are the location of the funding partners, the intermediaries, and then overlaid on that, those sort of maroon dots are where the Kula regional offices were, and CIFA continues in most of those offices. Just some of the retail financial intermediaries. True Group was one in the Eastern Cape that provided asset-based finance. That relationship... Yeah, that's the Kula offices. Those, well, are they brown, sort of reddish, depending on the printer. Those are the Kula regional offices, and the blue ones are the location of the financial intermediaries and partners.
That's just the towns,
yeah. Oh, just look at those bigger dots. I think the background map wasn't an ideal one. Just on the financial intermediaries that Kula partnered with, True Group, as I mentioned, in the Eastern Cape, provided asset-based finance. That relationship was ended towards the end of the financial year. True Group returned the capital. They exited from this market. It was actually quite a good relationship. Unfortunately, it didn't fit in with their strategy. Cape Capital, based in the Western Cape, down here, asset-based finance, trade finance and working capital, going strongly. Supplyfin in Limpopo province, providing bridging finance for government contracts. Metal, that provided invoice discounting to the panel beating industry, and that they had a national footprint. Marang, which is more on the microfinance side, provided group lending to micro and survivalist enterprises in the Eastern Cape, Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga. Redmill provided general SME finance, or still provides general SME finance in the Free State and Northern Cape. The Small Enterprise Foundation, doing group lending to micro and survivalist entrepreneurs in the Eastern Cape, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga. And then Kula had a relationship with ShopRite for the financing of OK stores, mainly in the Western Cape. In terms of joint ventures and funds, Kula had a joint venture with Anglo-American, called the Anglo-American Kula Mining Fund. It was a 10-year fund that ends next year, a 200 million rand fund, of which Kula contributed 50% and provides finance to junior mining projects. Together with business partners, Kula had a startup fund, 150 million rand fund, of which Kula contributed 80%, provided startup and early expansion capital for SMEs to together with Enablers, the Enablers Loan Fund, 50 million rand fund, of which Kula contributed 40%, and specifically in the ICT sector, also started an early expansion capital. And then also within Enablers, Kula had the SME Acceleration Fund, 50 million rand, of which Kula contributed 80%, startup and early expansion capital to SMEs generally. The Identity Development Fund, 51 million rand fund, of which Kula provided 94%, and again, startup and early expansion capital, primarily for women and youth-owned enterprises. Uto Capital SME Infrastructure Fund, 65 million rand, of which Kula contributed 46%, and that was aimed at construction companies. The Kula SME Fund has been closed. It's in disinvestment. It was 25 million, of which Kula contributed 100%. And then the Kula Akwande Fund is together with TSB, 100 million rand fund, of which Kula contributed 75% and provides finance to small-scale sugarcane growers and contractors. And those growers had offtake agreements with TSB, so TSB bought all the sugar back from them. Particularly the first and last ones were the Anglo-American and the Akwande ones that were very successful funds, or still are. Just in terms of the activities of the financial year, the highlights was really has been the launch of the Kula Direct Pilot, the improvement in the collection rate, 34% increase in collection rate, a major decrease in impairments and bad debt provisions compared to the previous year. Went down from 151 million to 30 million rand. Then, to me personally, one of the major highlights has been the level of commitment and the high quality outputs from the work streams that prepared for this, for the merger. Really enabled us to launch CIFA in April this year. Then obviously the formation of CIFA and its prospects, and also the fact that Kula had an unqualified audit report. If you look at disbursements, you'll see the downward trend from 2008 through to 2012. Cumulatively 1.1 billion rand over the last 5 years. We financed 1,617 SMEs in the past year, which created 2,180 job opportunities. 82% of those SMEs were black owned, and 45% of facilities were in rural provinces. And just to put a bit of perspective to that downward trend in disbursements, if you consider the high level of impairments and bad debt provisions in 2010 and 2011, it puts a bit of perspective to some of those disbursements in 2008 and 2009. Approvals, you'll see there was an uptick in the past financial year, and those disbursements, obviously, so a lot of those disbursements lag the approval, so most of those, some of those disbursements are coming through in the current financial year. The lower level of approvals compared to budget, although it's higher than the previous year, apart from Kula itself taking a much stronger stance in terms of risk management, especially where funds and RFIs are concerned, it applied stricter lending criteria. The commercial banks applied stricter lending criteria. The economic climate wasn't great, still the aftermath of the economic crisis, which led to risk aversion by our partners, and we also received a reduced allocation from the shareholder, and as I said, the global economic conditions. You'll see the breakdown, which in 2012 for the first time had retail finance, the Kula Direct product. In terms of the loan book, it's shrunk due to the higher collections and the lower disbursements. The subsequent disbursements in the current financial year will grow that book a bit again. But the total outstanding book to RFIs decreased by 22%. Total book to funds decreased by 8%. And credit indemnity decreased by 35%. In terms of the property portfolio, Kula provides these development properties for largely black entrepreneurs. Virtually all of these properties are located in underdeveloped areas, estimate that the businesses in those properties employ about 6,000 people. There you can see a split in terms of the number of businesses between industrial, retail, services, and then on the pie chart, the split is in terms of number of properties. So you'll see the split slightly different between the businesses and the type of properties. The spread in terms of race, only 10% white-owned businesses, 64% African-owned businesses, 17% colored-owned businesses, 9% Indian-owned businesses. The industrial parks were earmarked for retention to redevelop and upgrade in order to stimulate and grow entrepreneurs in these areas. These properties were transferred to Kula from the old small SBDC, the Small Business Development Corporation, as part of the capitalization of Kula when it was started. And we believe the returns there are employment creation and the skills, the development of skills. Still in the property portfolio, we billed almost 46 million rand in rentals in the past year, compared to 42 million rand in the previous year. The overheads and expenditure on those properties were 45.2 million rand. Unfortunately, 2.2 million rand were provided as doubtful debt in terms of rental arrears, but it's down from the previous year. The carrying value, the valuation of those properties is 195.3 million rand. That was kept the same from the previous year, but it's an increase of 4% since 2011. We developed a comprehensive strategy to turn around the property portfolio. As you can see, the provision for doubtful debt is still very high, and we're busy implementing that strategy. The strategy segmented the property portfolio into three categories: those that didn't fit the mandate and which were saleable. So for those, we were considering outright sale of those properties. Some were ideal for redevelopment, either ourselves or with partners, mainly with partners. And some were really problem properties, but fitted perfectly into the mandate in terms of SME development. And those, the strategy was to retain and turn those properties around. This strategy was approved by the Kula board, but we'll review that strategy with the new board together with IDC and EDD. Specifically on the sale of properties, we may reconsider selling those properties. Factors affecting the overall performance of the business over the year: we mentioned the economic crisis, we mentioned the reduced allocation of capital by the shareholder. Our intermediaries generally reduced their lending because of the risk aversion, and focused a lot on distressed SMEs to affect ease the effects of the poor economic climate. Across the sector, bad debt provisions were higher than normal, which you'll see Kula's bad debt provision was actually a lot lower than in previous years, but generally bad debt provisions were higher. And because of the lower interest rate environment, our revenue streams were lower. In terms of Kula Direct, the business case for Kula Direct was approved in December 2008. For the next 2 years, Kula undertook all the necessary research, study visits, and consultations, and the business plan for Kula Direct was approved in the 2010-2011 financial year. National Treasury approved 55 million rand of funding for the pilot project in the East London and Swanee offices. And during the year, Kula Direct managed a collection rate of 98% with zero impairments. If you look at the table there, you'll see we had a target of 35 million rand in approvals. We only managed 23 million rand in approvals, mainly because, I suppose, because it was a pilot, the approach was a little bit more conservative in terms of approvals. We financed 104 SMEs compared to a target of 980. 93% of them were black, higher than the target. 29% female-owned, 29% youth-owned, and 51% were in rural and peri-urban areas. After the merger, the launch of CFARC, the direct lending product went live in all provinces, and for the first two quarters of this year, we've disbursed more than 11 million rand in terms of Kula Direct, or now CFA Direct. I'll hand over to Andile to take you through the financial performance.
Good morning, honorable members. The whole overall financial performance of CFA has been satisfactory and an improvement compared to the previous financial year. As you can see, most of the indicators, I'll go through them one by one because they all signify, they all have underlying significant items underneath. In terms of revenue, as you can see, revenue has actually decreased by 8.9%. That's purely because of two things. The low interest environment, as Veli has indicated, as well as the limited disbursements that were done throughout the financial year. That has caused a lot of strain on the business because it constrained revenue growth very significantly. But because of that, we managed to contain operating expenditure. As you can see, it's down by 1.4%. The reason why it's down by 1.4%, it could have been much lower, but because we bought an intermediary during the financial year, NBF, which is based here in Cape Town, which entails taking over the operations and all the payments that was going to go out of that intermediary. So it increased expenditure a bit. Provisions for bad debts has decreased significantly, but that's due to the exercise being done in the prior year where we went to line by line on the RFIs and joint fines, and we provided for all the bad debts that we were aware of at the time. That caused that in the current financial year we didn't have to provide that much. Profit before tax, which is a loss, that also the loss decreased by 33.8%, which is a significant improvement. I mean, on a company level, the loss increased by 96.4%, which is an achievement in the current year. Non-current assets have gone down by 18.7%. That's due to the continuous impairment of the book over the years, as well as the limited disbursements that occurred during the year, because we were limited due to the merger being carried on, as well as the risky environment that prevailed in the current financial year. If you look at loans and advances, which is a major component of that as well, your loans actually decreased by 18.6%. The whole balance sheet didn't have a significant improvement. I mean, the only notable improvement on the balance sheet was the property portfolio, which grew their fair value over the current year. The total assets increased by 3.6% and equity increased by 5.5%. Like I alluded earlier, the company revenues are lower by 8.9%. We are working very hard in terms of making sure that in the new CFA environment we disperse as much as possible of whatever we approved in the prior financial year, as well as in the current financial year. Operating expenditure was well contained during the year, but that was in response of the constrained income generating activities. Impairments and provisions also stabilized, which showed a decrease of about 79.9%. The only notable provisions for there is the 2.2 million that Vili alluded to earlier on the properties. If you look at the total assets, it only increased by 4%, which is very marginal because we didn't experience growth in the loan book. So that growth is mainly due to the value of the investment properties. During the year, the loans and advances declined by 18% because of the improved collection rate, as well as the reclassification of that NBF financial intermediary, which I alluded to earlier, because it was an RFI which we bought, which we had to reclassify into equity. That acquisition resulted in an amount of about 31.9 million impairment due to the goodwill that we had recognized, but we were not supposed to recognize on the acquisition of NBF. The uncommitted cash is still at 403 million, which is significantly higher than 2011. That resulted in an increase in investment income, but that's also due to the limited disbursements that we've done. That's why the uncommitted cash is higher. If you look at the balance sheet as a whole, it is a remarkable improvement. The income statement as a whole, it is a remarkable improvement compared to prior year, except for a little dent on the revenue, which has taken a knock. But all the other indicators have sort of stabilized or have improved compared to the previous year. As I've alluded on the expenditure we've contained very well in the financial year. The expenses in total was 182 million compared to the 291 million which was incurred in the prior financial year. But that was done in response to the constrained revenue generating activities of the whole organization. If you look at some of the indicators, the cost to income ratio has actually increased, although the expenses have gone down, but the cost to income ratio has increased mainly due to the fact that we haven't been able to generate as much revenue as possible during the financial year. Compared to last year, although we had some impairments, but what happened is that in the prior year we were still able to generate some income that covered the expenses. As well, the interest rate environment actually came into knock in the 2012 financial year. The bottom line is that our profit before tax has actually improved drastically. I mean, if you compare the 129 million loss that occurred in the 2011 financial year to the 36 million that we actually reported in this current financial year, it must be a remarkable improvement. After tax, the figures are still the same. The 83 million in the last year compared to the 39 million shows that improvement that I was alluding to earlier. On the balance sheet, as explained earlier, we didn't really make a significant improvement. The value upwards, which is the increase, was only 4%, but only due to actually the properties that were revalued. So in terms of the loans that we dispersed, we didn't disperse that much because we also collected more, which actually decreased our loans and advances. This slide on impairments. As you can see, the impairments in total for the provisions up until 2012 is sitting at 44%. In 2011, it was sitting at 31%. That was because of the exercise that was done within those 2 years to clean up the book in terms of the non-performing aspect of the book. So that's why it actually increased that much between 2010 to 2011 and to 2014. If you look at the assets analysis for the last 5 years, the reclassification has actually been moving. If you look at 2008 compared to 2012, we had more investments in 2008 compared to 2012, which actually shows that during the year between 2008 and 2012, there was an effort to actually increase the loan part of the book. But as alluded to by Veli earlier, the impairment as well as the limited disbursement capabilities over the past 2 years, because of various reasons that we've mentioned, the low interest rate environment, the risk environment, as well as the limited capital that we had, actually we didn't increase the loans and advances as we should have over the past two to three years.
Sorry, so this presentation has a slide missing. I'm not sure where. If you look at copy. You'll see the outlook and activities for 2012-2013. With effect from 1st of April 2012, the activities of SAMAF were merged with Kula. The name of the company was changed to the Small Enterprise Finance Agency, SOE Limited, and it became a wholly owned subsidiary of the IDC. CIFAR also incorporates the small business activities that were previously housed within IDC. So some of the priorities for the current financial year is the placing of ex-SAMAF and ex-Kula staff into the new CIFAR structure in terms of a transfer agreement and a matching and placing framework that was negotiated at the EDD bargaining chamber. Another priority is intensified training and reskilling of staff, especially with regards to direct lending. If you take into account that the previous two businesses were both wholesale lenders, direct lending is new to both sets of staff. Merging of regional offices, most of that's happened. As leases become due for renewal, we move the offices together so that we only have one regional office. We need to conclude agreements with public and private sector partners. Quite a few of that has happened. We've entered into a joint venture, well not a joint venture, memorandum of understanding with the Mpumalanga regional government. We've entered into an agreement with the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants, where they provide graduate accounting students to provide a business hub. And the initial one is in our Braamfontein office, but that will be expanded to more offices as the project unfolds. So we're looking at more opportunities to create such partnerships. We need to strengthen and streamline lending systems and processes, again specifically with regards to direct lending. We need to build a new organizational culture. It's a new entity with a new way of doing things, and the focus must really be on delivery and performance. We've moved the head office away from the DTI campus. CIFAR moved into its new head office last week. And it needs to improve its efficiencies by limiting costs and resources, but maximizing the revenues going forward. And just on some concluding remarks, this is the last annual report of Kula, as it is, as we've mentioned. It will now be CIFAR. The year was characterized initially by limited availability of capital during the first half of the year, and during the second half of the year the focus was intensified activities towards the merger of Kula and SAMAF. The new entity has access to sufficient capital, no excuses there. It enjoys operational and other support from the IDC and will definitely show increased efficiencies. However, the full implementation will take some time. Thank you very much. Apologies for those slides that weren't in the presentation. I hope they're in your hard copies. Not.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Fori.
For the presentation.
On our members, that is the presentation from CIFAR. I think we need to engage and recognize you, Baba Mabasa, Baba Ngonyama, Mesu, Baba Shem.
In that order. Thank you. Thank you very much, Comrade Chair, and also a hearty welcome to new members that are constituting CIFAR. Pleasure to meet you, and also to wish you well. My first point is congratulate Kula
beating up on Anglo-American and Kula mining funds. I will assume that apart from Anglo-American Kula mining fund, there will be other funds that will have been formed along the same lines. If I could get more flesh of how this was constituted, what does it do, you know, just so that we see what to appreciate in it. And then my last one on slide 9. As at the launch, to what amount was Kula Direct capitalized? Thanks, Kobeche.
Thank you, Baba Mabasa. In that order. Well, Chairperson, I think my mine is to perhaps start with the target on job creation. And you referred to plus or minus, I think, 6,000 jobs that have been created. But we are not cited on what was the target in the first place for jobs that were supposed to be created by Kula. So the other one is on disbursements. Or rather, let me go to uncommitted programs. You seem to be having 400 and something million rands, which is an accumulation of uncommitted, if I'm not mistaken. And it does not augur well for an organization which is supposed to be serving on the mission that you've referred to, you've taken us through initially. I would want to congratulate you on the unqualified audit, but I have to take that and within the context of the huge amount of money that does not go to where it's supposed to go to. So that's one issue that maybe we need to be again taken in detail as to why are we having such huge amount of money which remains uncommitted. The other one is property portfolio. On property portfolio, it's, as you've pointed out, it's coming from SPDC. Would be interested to understand maybe the location of this. It's a tall order really for you to take us through where they are located, but just at the macro level, in terms of the urban and rural, because if we talk about proper rural development and job creation, especially where people are having challenges in the rural areas, you would expect that part of that property portfolio would be located in the rural areas, and what percentage of that is actually located in those areas. The last one is the issue on the carrying value. I'm not sure what is the meaning of that. It's a sort of a clarity-seeking question. What is the carrying value you've referred to here? And the last one, Chairperson, is the business hub that is being established at Bramfontein. You've referred to that. Can you take us through? Again, so that we understand in detail what it entails. Thank you very much. Otherwise, I want to congratulate you on the unqualified report at the end. Thank you. Thank you, Baba Ngonyama Mesu.
Thank you, Chair. Now, I must confess up front that I don't know what I'm going to be asking. I'm quite confused. And the reason I'm confused is that you've been giving a presentation on finance and money, and I don't always understand what it means when you put figures in front of us like this. I mean, I think, you know, what I would like to see, Chairperson, is I want somebody to answer the question, is the organization providing finance to SMMEs? And to what extent is that happening? On a scale of 1 to 10, where are we on this matter? Because we've come quite a long way with this these organizations to get to the merger point. This committee was very concerned that it was taking such a long time for the merger to happen and for action to continue to take place. And some of these slides look really impressive. I think of the one on page 7 with the JVs and the funds portfolio, and there's quite a lot of money that's been dispersed. And you mentioned that the Anglo one and the Akuwanze, Kula Akuwanze fund are still and are successful and so on. On a scale of 1 to 10, how successful, how many people, what is the substance? What I'm looking for is another slide that says, this is what we've done, this is where the mistakes were, this is where we're going, and this is the kind of job creation stuff that we're planning to see in the next year. When you come back a year from now, what are we going to see? It may just be, I admit, Chair, my confusion about numbers, because I, in contrast to my colleagues, do not trust the question of an unqualified audit. I want to see what's happening towards giving people loans and supporting SMMEs and creating jobs. I have to say I'm a little jaded on this thing, because I came from last week where we had hearings on manufacturing and industrial development issues, and all we heard the whole week was how businesses were closing down. And one of the problems that we were confronted with, this was in the Trade and Industry Portfolio Committee, was the administrative prices, and that's the electricity stuff and so on. And it was really, really depressing. So this is what we are looking to provide the backing for companies to start up and get going and stay going. So please forgive me for being a little bit churlish here. But I really need to understand what it's going to look like in a year's time. What is the objective? The other thing I'd like a little bit more information on page 20, you talked about the takeover of the intermediary financing organization. It was mentioned later. It's called what? NBS, yeah. Can you just give us a little bit more explanation about that? Because that sounds like quite an important initiative. I wasn't really aware of that fact before. Perhaps I missed it. But, Chair, that is my concern. I want to know where we're going to be in a year's time. Thanks.
Thank you, Mayor. So maybe just to add off what you have said, last time with Melusi Kekane was here being the chair, the board chair. In fact, we did ask that we needed to see the progress. We know that we are dispersing so much, but we wanted to know the value for money. After you've dispersed, how are they performing? How many have been mentored, which has are showing progress to say, oh, this one is out of the ICU, this one we could not be able to help this because of 1, 2, 3. But we have never got that response back. Maybe when you respond what Sue has said, try to encompass that there are so many which we have helped, but we could not be able to, not, but these we gave them capacity, then they can be able to, not just to say we disperse so much as if we are just ticking boxes.
Baba Mashash.
Yatoka Mthemba, good morning colleagues and to the delegation. I will try to be very brief. On slide 18, on the target, SMEs financed is 104, and the annual target was 980. And my calculation, if it's correct, the difference there would be 796. That's quite a huge margin, you know, towards the target. I will appreciate, though, that you some of the targets were met. And then I have a huge gripe when I have a sense that women development does not seem to be, you know, receiving the necessary attention. So I just want to find out the nature of of access to communities and the sort of catalytic approach, if you have one, to stimulate women business, because there your target was 40%, and I would imagine that the target must have been informed by some sort of desire to ensure that women are able to access the funding, and there there's a difference of 11%. So if you can just elaborate on that. The other issue, obviously, is that now there's CIFA, and when targets like this are not being met, you know, major targets like the one I referred to first of SMS finance, how can I put this? I want to find out, you know, the transfer of, and I use the word cautiously, the transfer of experiences of Kula to CIFA, to ensure that the target set, I would say, are realistic and are informed, and they will be able to respond to the dynamics and not set targets for the sake of setting targets. Are those targets achievable? And how do you sustain those targets? So then at least what Honorable Van der Merwe is asking about, that where are we a year from now, we are able to speak from, you know, a detailed program of action of what it is that you wanted to achieve. And so what are the challenges that would cause Kula to not achieve some of its targets, and the transfer of the shortcomings in that regard? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Baba Mashasha. I want to check. I remember when we were engaging last time. I know that you were not there, but I hope you know that we were always asking about the intermediaries, retail intermediaries, because that is the reason we said there must be Kula Direct, because we were having a problem with the intermediaries, because we found that you don't control them. They were charging some enormous interest, and when we checked who determined the interest, there was nobody. And we said, why can't we have Kula Direct? That's how it was originated. Because we wanted to do away with the intermediaries, because you could not be able to control them. But if you look at your slide, you can see that they are many there. In fact, you depend on them more than Kula. Now I want to check Kula vis-a-vis the intermediaries. And Masu has asked this. And when you show us offices, there is nothing there in the Northwest. I'm not seeing much in that. Why Northwest is not among the, when it comes to page RFI portfolio, and you can see that I'm not sure whether it's an omission or it's because you are doing nothing in the Northwest. The other thing, you seem to be proud of the collection, that we have collected so much. And I want to link your collection of money with the sustainabilities of the SMEs. I think the main agenda or the mandate is to sustain or to fund these SMEs. But you seem to be your money. funded is to collect more and to make your books look good that we are can be able to collect. But the mandate to say the people are lending, is there any value for money? Are they being helped? The other thing, you spoke about the reduced lending as if it is hampering you, but you've got surplus. We need to, you boast that you've got so much money in your reserves, but you complain about the reduced lending as if you needed some money. What were you going to do with that money if you've got some money left which was not utilized? The regional offices, particularly in the provinces, can you give us the breakdown, particularly in the rural provinces, like Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo? Can you give us the breakdown, and then how do we link these regional offices with the Kula Direct vis-a-vis the intermediaries? Because you showed us there that there are intermediaries around these regional offices, but we don't see Kula Direct. How is it linked to this? Lastly, is the Auditor General's report, the findings. The Auditor General was saying that the strategic planning does not, it's not suitable with your targets, and you have developed your strategic planning. It is not correlated with the targets. They are not suitable developed. I want to check, what have you done with that? I mean, have you corrected that? Because your target, as Baba Ukhema was asking, that your target seem not to correlate with your strategic planning. Have you done anything to correct that? Thank you very much. I think when you answer them, because we were not a specific non-financial and financials, you distribute among your team to say this one is going to answer this, this one is going to answer this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I just want to make one point before we respond to some of the questions that have been raised. It would have been ideal that now some of the questions are responded after the completion of the summer leg of the presentation. For example, the last question you raised on the Auditor General's report is more relevant to the summer annual report. I'm not sure if you want us to approach that way. We can answer the question as best we can now. But some will be more, especially in the first question relating to where is the new entity going forward. It's also relating to both the two products going forward. I'm not sure. Just the president has raised that.
Honourable members, what is your suggestion, Honourable members?
I'm suggesting, colleague chair, that we get a presentation on some of the questions have been.
Okay, so seemingly there's consensus that we start with the presentation of summer before they respond. Can we do that? Thank you.
and good morning to the honorable members of the committee. My name is Loni Mamatela. I'm presenting the sixth and last financial report of SAMA. As was indicated before, SAMA has subsequently been merged with Kula after this report was prepared and to form CIFA. I will quickly go through the mandate as is traditional and go through our operating model and the performance highlights and talk about the national footprint and go through our financial performance quickly and talk a little bit about the Auditor General's report. The mandate of SAMAP really is provision of access to affordable funding to SMEs and survivalist businesses. That is aimed at creating work opportunities and to sustain livelihoods. One of the major areas, one of the major important element of the mandate is that SAMAF is supposed to act as a catalyst in development of vibrant microfinance in industry in the country. It is hoped that these mandates, especially the important ones, will find residence or you find home in the new CIFA institution. The mission and vision of SAMAP, really the vision is to be a leader in development of microfinance in South Africa. As indicated earlier, it is hoped that it should be a catalyst to development of the industry. SAMAP does the funding through wholesale lending. We didn't have any direct lending at all. The operating model of SAMAP really was, as you can see on this slide, on the left, our highest authority was the Director General of EDD, and the Oversight Committee was the Internal Audit Committee, as well as we don't have it here, we had the Advisory Committee, but it didn't really work very well. And then as you move inside, you see how some of us was structured as in regulation, and IT being part of support, finance, and HR, and capacity building. And then we have operations to support the financial intermediaries. The performance highlights of some of are first, we are very proud to be standing here to say we have, as you see in the later slide, that we have performed on our final year. We disbursed more than any other year before, in the history of SAMAP. So that was very good, and we've assisted 14 microfinance institutions, 23 financial cooperatives were supported, and 24 stock firms were supported. The total number of borrowers increased the country. The total number of borrowers increased by 53%. These are the borrowers from our intermediaries. 68% of loans by the FI to the end user were to rural communities and 93% to microfinance. And one of the mandates of SAMAP is to mobilize savings. So we do report that the number of end user savings increased by 15% from 31 to 35,000. And our repayment rate rate, repayment rate of FIS, our clients, to ourselves, was the average of 95%, which is very good in the industry. And one of the mandates, one of the functional of objectives of SAMAF is, as part of the mandate, is to capacitate these financial institutions. So we do provide capacity building, and with that program, 272 individuals from 68 institutions nationally participated in the workshops that we organized for as a capacity building initiative. Again, in our case, SAMAF has received an unqualified report, and I'm also proud to say even our findings, audit findings, were far lower than they ever was in the history of SAMAF. The approved funds, here I'm going to have to ask for I'm just going to have to ask for an apology, because the number on 2010-2011 should be 52.1 million, not 58.3 million. However, it's still 52.1. That's the approval.
Which year?
For 2010-2011. Oh, sorry, 2011-2012. Not 58.3, but 52.1. But the 21% is still correct. It's just the number was wrong. But this is the second highest in SAMAF was started. The first one was 55.2 million, and it went down for whatever reason. But last year we had a real robust performance. This is the approvals, and the number we very proud of is really on this slide, the 58.3 million being 12.6 million of capacity building and 45.7 million of on lending. That, as you can see, this is the highest since the institution started. It has increased by 104% compared to the previous year, which is quite substantial. The on lending per province, there isn't we couldn't succeed in the last few months of last year to try and turn around Northern Cape. We still couldn't go get something done there, and neither could we succeed with Free State. However, for the rest of the country, we have quite substantial disbursements, particularly Limpopo and Western Cape and Gauteng, and KZN, of course. From KZN. And as far as capacity building is concerned, Western Cape was the highest benefactor, followed by Limpopo and KZN actually was followed Western Cape, almost equal. It is important to mention that capacity building, while we say it has the disbursement for capacity building has dropped a little, we are reaping the benefits of the investment we made in the previous years, where that resulted in less amount being required for capacity building in 2011-2012. Our national footprint, we classified our clients between microfinance institutions and financial service cooperatives, FSCs. And as you can see, we've got we don't have microfinance institutions in in Free State and Northern Cape. These microfinance institutions tend to congregate where there's more economic activity. So you will find a lot or some in Gauteng, Limpopo, and a few in KZN and Western Cape. Coming to the financial performance, the performance of some of what was indicated earlier was very good. The grant, of course, the grant was a bit less, grant for operations was a bit less, but we received quite an increased amount for on lending. And that has resulted really in the net surplus increasing quite substantially. We have a figure there of on loss on granting of loans. Now this is a very complicated accounting stuff because of IFRS. We have to do certain calculations that say if we lend our loans at market rate, we would have earned income of X amount. Now we do not lend at market rate. The rate that some have lent, the loan set is 20%. So because of that, you see what they consider a loss there of 5 million rand. But really that is a book entry to be correct as far as accounting is concerned. As far as these operating expenses are concerned, the compensation, which is compensation line, which is the income paid to staff, is gone down by 4 million rand. Goods and services also gone down. You'll see later in one of the slides how our overheads have really continued to go down, while the disbursements have increased and the income has increased slightly. Loans written off, one of the major culprits was that reduced that added to the expenditure was the write-offs of loans, which is 3.6 million, but this refers to the loans that were provided that were extended in previous periods, particularly when some have started operations. As indicated earlier, one can see from this slide that our expenses continue to reduce, which is a very good thing. Cost to income ratio, meaning the cost, how much it costs us to generate a certain level of income, continue to reduce, which is a good thing because then it costs us less and less. Now at 52%, so that went down all the way from the initial amount. Of course, staff costs just a bit steady, but a bit lower than the previous year, and which is also a good thing. The impairments have improved quite a lot. Mainly because some of the amounts that were impaired were eventually written off. We saw in the previous slide, but the other positive here is that our collection rate is so good. Therefore, our impairments will be very low. Then our impairment at 3.81% is what all institutions, including IDC, would envy. Assets for the last 5 years, one can see there 6 has increased from the the previous 5 years. One can see the loan book was pretty low, but this year, because of the robust performance and the disbursement, the loan values have increased. Loan book has increased quite substantially, one would say. And the 191,000 that you see as invest, 191 million that you see as investment there, that is the cash that was in summer books that was subsequently transferred to CIFA as part of the over the measure, as part of the transfer of assets. We indicated earlier that we received an unqualified opinion, which is good, but the issues of going concern, which is really not the making of SAMAF, was pointed out as a matter of emphasis, and a few other matters of emphasis were recorded, being material loss of 3.6 million. But this is write-off. These are write-offs that we discussed earlier. But you know, for the auditors have to show it here as a matter of emphasis, and impairment of that amount, which is also what we spoke about earlier as the accounting entry for FRIs. The last slide really is about the fact that SAMAF is no more, and we did everything we could to get SAMAF ready to be incorporated with KULA, and I think we are as SAMAF proud to be closing this chapter with a good positive note. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Baba Mama Chela. I think the questions we did ask about KULA, they were relevant. And although we've allowed for this to happen, they still remain relevant. I think they are unconnected. So what we can do now, let's ask questions now which are relevant to SAMAF, or let's get the responses before we ask a question on SAMAF, because I thought that we were going to be answered through this presentation, but we are not. So let's get the responses, then we'll ask questions on SAMAF specifically. Babu Chair.
Chair, as I've indicated, I'd like to be excused. May I just throw a comment before I go, which is just is of concern to me. I get a sense that SAMAF they achieved their targets. I'm seeing that, you know, monies were being spent and so on. I'll just cautiously assume such. I get a sense, though, that KULA, upon learning that it was going to be integrated into, you know, to CIFA, sort of slowed down in their operations. And if that is the case, that would have been very tragic. If there was a slowdown now to say, well, we'll wait out until the merger. So I just thought I raised that concern, because that's the sense I got towards the end. You know, there was a slow run in implementing some of its programs. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, well, Mashasha, but if you stay until they respond to your questions.
Okay, up to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairman. I will attempt to answer most of the KULA questions. I'm going to leave the question on the property and on the explanation of carrying value to my colleague, Mr. Ramahunga. questions of Honourable Member Mabasa with that of Honourable Van der Merwe. In terms of what we learned from the past and what do we take forward? I suppose that question of if we had to rate our performance out of 10, I suppose if it was anything more than a 5, we wouldn't need a CIFA. So I'm gonna leave it at that. It was not a 10, but I don't think it was a 1. I think one of the main things that we learned, and the chair also touched on it, is that you need to have direct lending. You can't rely on the intermediaries alone. So I think that was one of the main things that we're taking forward into the new entity. And if you look at the new entity's corporate plan, which unfortunately hasn't been presented to the committee, but the focus shifts from lending through intermediaries to direct lending on the one side, and a much stronger emphasis on the ex-sum of business of microfinance because of the number of people that you reach through that. I think those are some of the main things that we learned. The other one is the regional footprint, and it was touched on by other members as well. You can't expect to service the entire country's SMEs from 9 regional offices, even with intermediaries. So the focus on expanding that footprint, creating more offices, more branch offices, and what we call satellite offices, which are not necessarily a manned office, but it could be a desk in a CEDA office or in a post bank or in a regional DFI's offices. So those sort of partnerships and working together with other institutions in order to expand the national footprint is also a critical part of the plan going forward. Training of staff, specifically on direct lending, we've seen that there's a huge task ahead of us in terms of that. So that's something that we've learned. In terms of the intermediaries that we deal with, whether they, what we call the RFIs, the retail finance intermediaries, the ex-Kula type intermediaries, or whether they're the microfinance intermediaries that more relate to the sum of intermediaries. And the big difference is that those microfinance intermediaries are mainly NGOs, etc., whereas the Kula ones, the RFIs, are mainly for-profit type companies. I think the main lesson that we learned is you can't stand back and wait for them to do the work. You've got to be close to them. We need to even go as far as to provide them with systems in some cases, and those are some of the things that we're looking at. You need to influence the interest rate that they charge. You can't just leave them. They all charge the maximum rate allowable under the National Credit Act, and they still don't make a profit. So you need to be a lot more closer. You need to manage that a lot stronger. Let's see if there's other points here on that. One of the things, I mean, in terms of the impact that we're making, you saw on the slide that Kula disbursed 1.1 billion rand over the past 5 years. The target for CIFA is 2 billion rand over the next 3 years. So it's quite a substantial acceleration. Look, a merger, as the private sector will also tell you, doesn't go without its hiccups, and we've certainly experienced a few of those. We are not where we wanted to be at this stage, although progress has been good. But the lending to SMEs is not quite where we wanted to be, and we're working on that, and Takani's taken over for me, working flat out in improving that, especially with regards to direct lending. And the main thing there is the training of staff. In terms of the funds, Anglo Kula, as I mentioned, that's a successful one. Other funds, the Akwanze one is with TSB. It's something that we will continue to do. It is an effective way of providing funding to specific industries or specific sectors, and where we can do it with a partner and they can help us to extend our footprint, we'll certainly do that. And we've learned from the successes of specifically those two funds, and privatization. National Treasury allocated 55 million rand, of which 5 million rand was for expenses and 50 million rand was for on-lending. It was over a year. That year period started off a bit late. So it only didn't start at the beginning of the financial year, so it ran into the current financial year. So where we don't have specific numbers, I'm going to request that my colleagues provide written answers. For instance, the question that the Honourable Member Ngonyama asked about the target on job creation, I don't have that number with me. I don't know if Andile... Okay, Andile's got it, so he'll give you feedback on that. Uncommitted programs, and it also goes to the question on did Kula slow down? And the fact that we still had 400 million rand in cash at the end of the year. It's a bit of a, it gives a bit of a skewed picture, because the first 6 months of the year, there certainly wasn't enough capital to lend as Kula would have wanted to, on the one hand. But also, because of the bad experience in the previous year, with money lost and amounts written off with money lent to intermediaries, there was a very strong initiative around risk management on intermediaries. So disbursement to intermediaries was held back, not only because of a lack of capital, but of course also we first wanted to get a good grasp on those intermediaries. Towards the end of the year, there was money returned, like the True Group transaction, although the fund that didn't continue, and also because of the good collection rate, we ended up the end of the year with more capital, or more cash than would be ideal. But certainly there was no slowing down. To the extent that people spent a lot of time on working towards the merger, maybe the performance would have been better if they didn't work on the merger, but there was definitely not an intentional slowing down. Sorry, I was jumping around a bit. The property portfolio on delivery answer. On the business hubs, the minister... Minister Patel, when he launched CIFA, he also announced this this MOU that was agreed with SICA, this is South African Institute of Chartered Accountants, where they took a number of graduates and provided them further training. They're not chartered accountants, they're BCom graduates with that don't have employment. Further practical training was provided. And some of those graduates would be given job opportunities within small business, but a number of them would be housed in these business hubs. Now, the idea of the business hub is just to provide to small businesses accounting services, tax services, VAT services, that kind of support that normally businesses that are that small can't necessarily afford an accountant on a full-time basis or even on a part-time basis to provide those services. And these business hubs would be providing those sort of services to small businesses as a service. The explanation on the acquisition of New Business Finance, Kula felt, the management of Kula at the time, were also frustrated with the lack of progress in getting Kula Direct up and running. And it was felt that could be accelerated through the acquisition of an existing business that was already lending directly to small businesses with its systems, with its experience. New Business Finance down here in Cape Town was acquired, and it certainly did help with the acceleration of Kula Direct. The systems, the processes, the experience of the management team, all of that contributed to rolling out Kula Direct. In terms of the question of how many SMEs we helped, where we worked through the intermediaries, it's sometimes difficult to get the exact answer, but we'll provide you with some answers there. And in terms of mentorship, all our direct clients were provided with mentorship services, and a lot of our intermediaries also provide, most of our intermediaries also provide a mentorship service to their clients. The four versus the 980 SMEs financed under Kula Direct. It's easy to say I wasn't involved in setting the target, but I wasn't. I don't know how that was 980 came about, but the 104 gives you an average loan size of around 250,000 or just below 250,000 rand, which we currently believe is a realistic average loan size for direct lending. So it's a function of that, the average loan size, but also a function of the slower than anticipated rollout, but the later start to the pilot. Women development, all I can do is assure you that it is a priority, and you will see more on the smaller and the microfinance side. There's a lot more women businesses financed. That doesn't mean to say that we neglect women when it comes to the larger businesses. It remains a focus of CIFA going forward. Then Chair asked about intermediaries. I think I've answered that to an extent. It is certainly the focus will move away from intermediaries in CIFA. Although we still want to deal with intermediaries where they can help us in extending our footprint, where they share our developmental objectives. In other words, we're not going to use intermediaries that are just in it for the money. They must have that developmental mandate. Or where we can achieve specific sectoral or subsector-related objectives. For instance, where we have the arrangement with Metal, which is specifically aimed at panel beaters. The arrangement with Anglo, which is specifically aimed at small mining or junior miners. So those sort of intermediaries we will still use because we can achieve certain objectives with them. We will move away from the general intermediary that just provides SME finance. So the dependence on intermediaries will certainly decrease. And as far as Northwest is concerned, we do have an office there for Kula and SumUp. So in terms of direct lending, we certainly will be focusing on the Northwest province. Unfortunately, we didn't have any intermediaries in the province, but I believe some of the intermediaries did provide funding into the province, but they weren't based there. Collections versus sustainability. I mean, it's part of a wider question of sustainability of the institution versus its developmental mandate. And if you take it down to, is the focus on collections or is the focus on the sustainability of the SMEs? The focus has to be on both. We certainly don't want to finance SMEs that will not be around in many years' time. We want to finance sustainable businesses. And a sustainable business will repay its loans and its debts. So the focus certainly is on both. The fact... Now, mentoring is a critical. I think if we look at CIFA, as I mentioned just now, if we're just going to provide loans, we might as well not have a CIFA. You have to support the provision of loans with mentorship and business support services. And we will enter into partnerships. We will work with CEDA in order to provide those mentorship services. Critical element of the business model going forward. So the focus definitely is not just on collections, it certainly is on the sustainability of those SMEs. The reduced capital, I mentioned that in the first half of the year it certainly was an issue, in the latter half of the year it was less of an issue. A breakdown of regional offices, currently we only have the provincial offices except in, so we have in Gauteng we have Johannesburg and Pretoria. In the Eastern Cape we have East London and Port Elizabeth. Then we have an office in every other province, mainly in the capitals of those provinces. The CIFA business plan envisages quite a strong rollout of branch offices that support support those regional offices, specifically into rural areas, and as I mentioned, the satellite offices, which could be a desk that is manned one day a week, but provides the support into the deep rural areas. I think I've covered all the cooler questions. Andile, do you want to cover the ones that I didn't, please?
The target on the jobs was 4,000.
The target was 4,062, and that was a revised target. I think it's important to take into cognizance that for the same reasons that we have an uncommitted cash of about 103 million, it will contribute to the challenges that we encountered in terms of meeting that target of 4,062, because that's half of what we actually promised to actually do in that year. Yes, that's the whole country.
It's an offer to the if I may comment, because we'd imagine that a target would be 4,000 or 6,000. I don't know why I have a 62. And for interest sake, and it makes one to be suspicious.
I would agree that one should probably round these down, but it's a calculated target, so it's based on average loan sizes, number of businesses, the spread of loans between intermediaries and direct. So it's a calculated target based on that, but I would agree, one must rather than at the end just round it down.
The carrying value is just an accounting term, but what it actually means is what you will get for that particular asset at any given time. During that time, it takes into account what cost you to buy that asset, less the diminishing value over time. So that's what it essentially means, a carrying value. In terms of
depreciation,
it's cost less depreciation. So it's what would sell that asset on the open market, less depreciation after you've used it. The property portfolio, I mean, that we need to take into cognizance that is the book that we took over from the former SPDC. The location is spread, but mainly in Gauteng and Western Cape, but in the townships, with a few in KZN, Northern Cape, Mpumalanga, and Eastern Cape. Eastern Cape is more particularly based in around the Port Elizabeth area, with KwaZulu-Natal, which is my home province, Umlazi, Kwatavega, the Victoria Street Mall is part of it. But yeah, the majority of these properties are around Gauteng and Western Cape, with particular emphasis on in townships.
You know, starting with jobs, in my view, I really want to say that the target that we actually set for ourselves was very minimal. The contribution for Kula and to be 4,000 within the broad target of the country that has been set up, I mean, there is absolutely, in my view, no value for money for setting up Kula. And if we actually look and we do analysis, in all fairness, 4,000 within the kind of unemployment that we have in South Africa, and truly, and if you link that up with the amount of money that perhaps is being used and to sustain the very institution itself. The number of people, because we need to look at the number of people as well that are employed by Kula. And whether, when we talk about job creation, are we including the people that are actually employed in the very offices of Kula, or are we talking about the new jobs outside? Then in my view, there is absolutely no reason why we have Kula, if we talk that kind of figure. And unfortunately, and the chairperson, we have to make that critique. That's number one. Number two, and on the question of the properties, I understand that we're still talking about SBDC legacy. In my view, SBDC was there long time ago. And I would have imagined that we would have added more properties, chairperson, in order to break the imbalance, which, because SBDC definitely was meant to serve, and there was it was a part and parcel of the apartheid strategy of creating a black middle class within urban areas, and very, very little was considered for rural areas, because rural areas mostly were supposed to be cheap labor reserves. And those people are supposed to go and work in the mines. They are not meant to be sustainable. And our responsibility was to ensure that we create more infrastructure in those areas. For instance, every time we meet, Chairperson would remember that we talk about the infrastructure that we have in the homelands. And I am not sure why that infrastructure is not put in the same pool. And it's managed, because if you go to all these homelands, we have lots and lots of this infrastructure which is lying fallow and is being vandalized. And within a program like this, Kula, and I suppose maybe CIFA, and in this case, I would definitely see the need for us to find some kind of integration and incorporation of such properties to this property portfolio. And the last issue from me, and before I get into perhaps some of the clarity-seeking question, in the manner in which we actually presented our input, it would have been much simpler if we had actually looked at the products and services. And that slide, for instance, which talks about business loans, credit indemnities, joint ventures, funds, direct, and so on, and then give some kind of figures that go with that. For instance, on the question of indemnities, we don't know, as I'm sitting here, I don't know how much indemnities were given by Kula, for instance. I don't know myself as I'm sitting here, and I don't know within the mentorship program, for instance. How many people do we have in the pool? Yes, we are being taken into consideration about the relationship with the BASA and the database, but we don't know. If I'm asked tomorrow and then within Parliament and we're discussing within the portfolio committee, I will not be able to articulate how much have we made an impact on the mentorship. The report that we're getting, Chairperson, on the new program of the business hub, it's quite, and it's sort of attractive. But even that one, it's centrally located around Johannesburg. Again, does not go out to other provinces. And even that one, and we don't have figures about it. And it's a program which is there in the pipeline. I don't know whether it or just maybe an agreement, and that's all. Chair, and that my view is that the question of the products and services, next time we get a report, let us be given what is the target on the business loans, what is the target on the credit indemnities, what
and have we managed to achieve? It makes it very, very easy for us because we have products and services here, and but we can't account on it. The last one, Chairperson, now, is the question of RFI portfolio on ShopRite. And as the, maybe we need to be taken into confidence as to what is happening there, because it's RFI for the, what you call, of ShopRite, and OK Bazaar, rather. And can you explain that one? Because I don't see any relationship with the government. It's completely private sector.
Yeah, but I don't think they've finished. I thought you were still responding on the cooler. I don't think, have you finished responding on the questions? Was it the last responses? Oh, okay. So we should write here, because we are still going to come to the, we are still going to Samaf, yeah.
But you listen for Samaf.
Okay.
I was just making for my
phone. Okay. So can you respond on those follow-ups so that we can... Do we have any follow-up left on the summer, on the cooler thing before we proceed to summer? Can you respond on those follow-ups?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I would agree that the jobs target is low. The CIFA target is substantially more than that, and is also specific, broken down between microfinance, SME finance, intermediaries, etc. The properties, and maybe Saul can provide a bit more clarity on that, but from my perspective, the expansion of the portfolio was not a critical part of the mandate. So it was basically maintaining that portfolio. And even in preparing the CIFA business case, the question was, what do we do with the properties? Is it, should it be part of CIFA's mandate? Should it be, should there be a separate institution that provides properties and expands properties? Could it be part of IDC? In the end, we retained it within CIFA, but also not in the business plan, the expansion of that portfolio. And that's still being considered by EDD. Where should that be? Because it's seen as a need, but we don't quite know where it should be housed. On providing the results in a more meaningful format, I'm sure Takan has made a note. In the future, they'll do that. And also, the business plan was prepared in that we have targets per product, and it should be quite simple to report back in that format going forward. The business hub does not exist yet. Those graduates are still in their training. They'll be graduating in December, and the first hub will start operating probably in January or late January, early February. Joburg is the first office, and it's a pilot. If we see it's successful, and if Psycho is happy with the progress, then it will certainly be expanded into the rest of the country, into all the regional offices. They, Cycon's very excited about the program, and so are we. So it, within a year, I would expect it to grow quite substantially. The ShopRite product was established, and I think there were one or two OK Bazaars financed. It was to assist. It was, and this kind of thing we'll do more of in the future as well, to assist black entrepreneurs to own these franchise stores. One or two were financed, and then it went very quiet. ShopRite held back a bit on that, and then towards the end of the year, that was revived again. I think we financed one subsequently. But we're working with ShopRite and expanding that product. Did I skip anything? Did I answer all your questions?
No.
Thank you.
No. I'll go back to the CEO. I'll tell you why did I ask the plan, the strategic planning versus the targets. That was the auditor's findings or recommendations. That's why we wanted to find that, because when the department, maybe Levin will come in there, because
they've done, the department has done a self-assessment. The department. And now when they talk about summer, I mean, they talk about cool, they were giving them low marks because of they're saying that your strategic planning does not correlate with your targets. So I wanted to check whether have you corrected that, because those were the findings by the monitoring department of monitoring and evaluation, and and performance, performance evaluation. They were pointing out that with cooler, your strategic planning does not collaborate with your targets. It was not well developed. So I was checking whether you were aware of that, or what are you doing to correct that?
Honourable Member, I thought when I was responding that note, that might be relating to some of, I was referring to some of page 19 of the slide, but you are right that note is also relevant to COLA.
Yes, Honourable Chair, we have taken into cognizance, at the moment we are running a program to actually improve the way that we report in terms of coming up with targets, in terms of measuring them, making sure that they are easily understandable. When the auditors picked that up, we actually agreed with the finding, and you'll see there's some specific items there as to what were they talking about. But subsequently, within the organization itself, we have gone back, we have done workshops, we have tried to get, because there's also some reporting that goes to the EDD, we are in the process of actually collaborating, taking the outcomes of the workshops into account and coming up with a simplified and easily understandable method of reporting, which will actually take away the problems that that the auditors have raised. But it is part of the project, and it is part of the plan of addressing the audit issues that the auditors have raised.
Thank you. We've got tea outside, but I'll request that we don't go for break. We just say when you want, they've said there's fresh tea, you can just go out, grab a cup, and we have a waiting tea time. So we'll continue with the, I think, is it a response to COLA, because I wanted to give members the opportunity to ask about summer.
Chair, I thought I should just come in, because it's also like Takane mentioned, that question could also come for some of as well. The question of information not aligned to strategy. That's, I think, so it's in our slide. What has happened in the...
Let's go straight to questions to Samaf, and then but those who are willing to have a cup of tea, you can sneak quietly, come back, and we continue with our meetings. Any question? Baba Ngonyama, you are the first one. Baba Mabaso, the second one. Madam Sue, are you not asking any with summer? Okay, you'll come later. Okay, thank you. Let's have that order. Well, Chair, on SAMAF, it's a question of highlighting what is obvious in terms of disproportionate and activity with regard to provinces. Even the explanation which is being given, which says that the activity goes with the commercial or economic activity with regard to differences with regard to provinces is not satisfying. For instance, if we say that Free State, just to cite an example,
that we have as reflected in slide 10 relative to Limpopo, which gets more or less 50% of the activity. There is absolutely something which we're not doing in provinces which is being mastered by Limpopo. And there's absolutely something that calls for thorough inspection. And Northern Cape again, and unfortunately some of these provinces that we are referring to are provinces where we have serious challenges of unemployment, and but some of doesn't seem to be motivated to have activities in those provinces. It's a very, very painful one, I must say. And 50% of the activities in one province. By the way, my understanding, Chairperson and members, is that Samaf and Kula are supposed to create staircases for the commercial activities for the informal moving to the formal, as we've referred to in your documentation here. And then taking a number of people that are in the margins of the economy into the center of the economy. And if we say that these are the results, I'm not sure myself and about the end result. We can only applaud and the strategy of Limpopo. And however, it should be in the interest of some of that what Limpopo is doing should be modeled for other provinces. That's one, Chairperson. And the next one is the surplus. And again, we can, and surplus is positive, but within the context of the mandate we had, celebrate, Chairperson. Unfortunately, we can't celebrate, as you were saying, and we can't celebrate when we have this disproportionality that we are reflected to here. And so again, the question of the investments vis-a-vis the loans, a huge amount is being invested, and the need is there, the mandate, which contradicts with the very mandate of some, because it is supposed to be the opposite. Maybe that's all that I would like to lament about. And really, it's a lamentation. And because our responsibility is to talk for those people that cannot have this kind of information that we have. And so we definitely like to be taken and on board on these disproportionalities. But fortunately, we believe, Chairperson, that this is the end of the road for Samaf and for Kula. But there's a future as well, because if this trend is carried forward as is to SIFA, then it means that we're not going to have a palatable culture. And it means that the impact that we're supposed to be having in South Africa with the unemployment that we have and the huge millions of people that on a daily basis are in the streets because of the needs and because they are unemployed and their eyes are fixed on Kula and Samaf and SIFA in future. And we can only say that God forbid. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Baba Ngwenya, Baba Mambasa.
My follow up is also related to what Uwabunya may say, because Sifa, we have to speak with, you know, on Sifa even as we speak of Samaf Kulam inevitably. I don't know whether we are more ambitious as members of Parliament, whether we expect too much from Samaf and Kula, in this instance from Samaf. If we say we don't feel the Samaf on the ground, whether you share the same sentiment. Because if the difference between the performance of Samaf and Sifa is just going to be a minimum one, then we are going to have lots of fights. I don't know how those fights are going to end. Because there is no way we can tolerate anything closer to the performance of Samaf. And also the personnel, is it because of understaffing? Is it because of undercapitalization in terms of finances? What is it? Because when the president said the 5 million jobs must be created, amongst the people that must create those jobs, it's yourselves. You know how poverty is in the rural areas, where you find it really, you just see it. The question is whether your outlook is, do you go to these places? Because the other danger that we must caution very early is offices sometimes consume people, where you find that senior officials are in the offices, and then they don't have a feel of what is going on. We know South Africa is big, but you'll really have to travel South Africa, and so that you can come with strategies. Cooperatives, we are waiting on a bill of cooperatives which will soon become an act. As soon as we unleash it, this is another instrument in your hands. And when people say, no, we don't get funding, we don't get funding, I know I'm speaking too broadly, but it's because we really do work. And the very, very first on slide 3, it says Samaf's mandate is to create work opportunities and sustainable livelihood. Just those key ways are telling us what lies ahead of us as challenges. So let me stop there, Comrade Chair, and say we must appeal that nothing that's not of value must move from Samaf into the new organization. That area will have to be very, very well sifted. Otherwise, we are in trouble. Thanks, Kulich.
thanks, Baba Mabaso.
It is worrying. In fact, even the target, this target is. I'm thinking of just one company being established to produce something, then you find that it can be able to create 10,000 jobs. Then you look at the value of that company and you look at at our Samaf, and then the value for money. It's worrying. I've seen there you're talking about 272 people who have been capacitated, and
I'm sure if you say 272, you mean people who attended the workshop.
Maybe one day workshop, then you count those people that they've been capacitated.
Are we sure? Or we just saying, you know, they attended, ma'am, cartography and value register. Then you count, we have capacitated this person and we have dispersed so much money. But you are not sure whether that person did get capacity. If you can, I was thinking that when we want to know how many people have been capacitated or developed, you'll be able to point the institutions, this one, we're taking them from there to here, and these are the results. Not just the people who attended the workshop, then you say you have capacitated those people, because we can't measure that. The other thing, I think we have to be more detailed when it comes to intermediaries. Because they keep on coming and you seem you are moving away from them, but you don't have the capacity to do without them. And maybe we must ask this question: who is your target client? Is it Mamikize there at Kwalam, the one who's selling mhoti and the smile, or is the intermediary? I mean, this person, these FFCs, are those your target? Because if you look at the way you operate, the people who get better is the FFCs. You find they are well off. Then it means your target is the FFCs, not Mamkize, who is selling on the street. Because when we were doing oversight, we went to Kwalanga, Kukuletu. We found that Mamkize was selling a whole smile. He was saying that, yeah, I was given by some of 1,000, but I have to repay this 1,000, and they want 500 every week. Every week I must bring back this 500. If you look at this mama, no, there's no capacity at all, nothing like that, except that she's working for that intermediary who gave that this 1,000, because every week if you submit 500, then what is your profit? Then when we ask the then they could not tell us. They said, no, it's about 29%. I said, oh, it means that person is working for you. You just collect. That's why I was asking this collection, that you collect. It's good collecting. But do you see how that Mamkize, who's bringing every week 5,000 for 6 months. I'm sorry, 500 for 6 months. He was giving, but 1,000. And you can see it's exploitation. Now, that's why we are saying we can't have a government who's promoting mashonisa through the poor people on the road. You give the money mashonisa to go and lend so that they make exorbitant interest. And when we ask, how much are these intermediates charging? You don't know. You say, no, it's a gray area. Why do you give these intermediaries if you don't know how much they charge, if you don't control them? The other one was charging 40% interest. I think that one was supposed to bring every week 500 to the intermediary. You can see what we are talking about. And we went to Basulu Natal. You remember when we went down to Pushes? Same thing. People there were organized just so that we can see that there is a co-op. But when you look at it, you find that they were not making any profit. They were kept busy for the intermediary to produce some profit.
assessment that how do you, let's say when you are assessing yourself, because the department has assessed themselves through the monitoring and evaluation, and then the way they were scoring very low, particularly when it comes to entities like SAMAF, KULA and all that. Now I'm asking yourself, whether have you evaluated, have you assessed yourself, self-assessment? What have you found? Are you happy with it? Or we can say maybe if you are going to suffer, there will be huge improvement because we have learned and we have seen what was not working. It's unfortunate that CIFA has not tabled their strategic planning, because we'll be able to see if we are continuing with the same thing. But though, I would like you to say something on that. Thank you.
These are really thorny questions, and this is the second time I receive them. And we're hoping that much as we have done the best at SAMAF to address these issues, we're thinking that and hoping that CIFA will, going forward, use this as a learning point and improve on it. But when you start with the issue of disproportionate activities in provinces, this is no excuse, but we try very hard, as well as all of the DFIs, try very hard to make something into crack into the Free State, into especially Northern Cape. We believe me, we're investing a lot of resources in there. We go in there ourselves. We were going there ourselves to try and mobilize. We even, unfortunately, we didn't have a regional manager in the Northern Cape. We had to get another regional manager to try and assist in Northern Cape. We were not in a position to employ anybody because we were moving to KULA to a measure. So the employment at SAMAF was all positions were practically freed at SAMAF. So that's also created a bit of a problem. As far as Free State, we worked very hard. At the moment, we have an application from Modico MFI for 5 million, but yes, that's not enough. But there are signs of some amount of improvement. The surplus chair is also a funny issue. It is difficult to defend why we should have a surplus when we're supposed to be spending that money or utilizing that money on lending and capacity building. But one can take to heart the fact that things have improved considerably at SAMAF. Like we mentioned earlier, there were a lot more disbursements in the previous year. Therefore, going forward, if one can use previous performance as a base, then one would expect an improvement on what SAMAF has done already, and that should, to a very large extent, address the issue of funds that lie in the balance sheet and not being disbursed. Honorable Mabasa talked about SAMAF low performance. I think, in fact, the performance was quite improved. And the issue, the challenge that was raised is what is the problem? I think to a large extent, or to some degree, the problem was with the model, because some of was doing funding through intermediaries. We could not go and provide funding directly to Abu Mama that Babu Zulu talked about. But we should also consider the fact that some of as part of the mandate, some of it is to set up these financial institutions, some of it is to start groups of approach groups of people and put them together and give them training and capacity to in order to get them to form a financial institution that we call FSC, Financial Services Cooperative. And when I talk about the capacity building, and there were 212 people who attended from 64 institutions, 64 or 68 institutions, it is important because these are the institutions that we mobilize from the ground. In Limpopo, for instance, there's Kuba Mdwanyani, which was a stock fell of some kind of loose arrangement, but which we build continuously, and it takes time until they became an FSC. Equally, there's G50 in Limpopo, similar. So it does take time. We're approaching people who some of them in rural areas who don't really have acumen in financial management, training them and getting them together, because they would have already started some sort of a saving club of some kind and develop them to become independent, so to start up their own financial institute. It takes time, but we have done it. We've got quite a few that we have assisted. And like I was saying, right now we're moving at a real good momentum. We are going to increase even more. And the target lines, Chairperson, is really, target lines are the Abu Mama, the Abu Mama Sales Corp, and, you know, those are our target lines. Now, as you would have it, in some provinces were successful in getting these Abu Mama to form their own financial institution called an FSC that we will fund. We provide grant funding to, we train them and we provide on lending to them. And it works. So the target line still remains Abu Mama. In some cases, of course, we're not there yet. That's why we go through the financial intermediary. But it is important, you know, when one goes to areas like Limpopo, there's an area called Chakuma in Limpopo, where you see lots of ladies selling vegetables and produce it's a hype. It's a very active market. Even I think they operate until 12 or something. You know, I used to be a restaurant manager there. So I used to pass there late at night. They'll be operating. Just as you drive into Toronto, that active market, that is sustained really by the funding from SAMAF to a very large extent. So although we're not able to go straight to them as yet, but through the intermediaries, we're able to extend the type of funding, and it creates, like we said earlier, employment. Those people are we call them survivalists, but they're employed. They sit there, they sell, and they make money. And we were hoping going forward we'll have stories like those of success throughout the country. But looking at the CIFA now goes can lend direct at least up to from 100,000. Yeah, from 100,000. Or from 50,000. So some of those mamas who had to go through the financial intermediary would now have access to direct funding from CIFA, which is a real, real good thing. And interest. This question is difficult. It was raised last year, and we submitted a nice response to it. But we go through the same one again. No, we go through it again. The problem here is with the interest rate that these intermediaries are allowed to charge in terms of regulation for the aid of NCA. They can charge up to 60% per annum. But we said here in the list of our MFIs that we're dealing with, we actually attached a list here. They charge up to 31% per annum, our MFIs that they're dealing with. So it's not really the same as what the commercial banks would be charging. It's considerably lower than the NCR maximum. But we were working, Sama, on a model to get the intermediaries to charge even lower amount. But I think Kula, CIFA is taking on the baton to try and come up with a model that would be much better than what we're getting now.
I think, Chair, I just want to comment on the question relating to the concern that you are having, the trend that you have seen from Samaf and Kula. You would not want to see that trend being transposed into CIFA. And I can really indicate here to you today that the reason for the formation of CIFA, but precisely because of the trend that has not been satisfactory over the years. So CIFA will be a complete paradigm shift. You have indicated that you don't want to see, for example, the trend in terms of the number of jobs that have been provided as a target. Yes, indeed, from CIFA's perspective, there is going to be a real quantum leap. So there will not be really a comparison over time. CIFA was launched on the 1st of April. There has been, as Vili indicated, the integration of the staff, the need of training the staff. But the intention is that CIFA has to make sure that there is a complete change, a huge change as compared to what the two previous institutions have done going forward. I think when time comes, when present in the near future the corporate plan of CIFA, we will be able to see in terms of where this new or renewed organization is going into the future. And let me also mention, in terms of the issue of exploitation of the ultimate consumers or ultimate customers, we have deliberated that at length during the various work streams that were held prior to the formation of CIFA, that we are not going to allow the intermediaries to get a simple or cheaper funding from CIFA, and then they go on and on land to our end users to add an exorbitant interest rate. So we are really mindful of that. We will enter into various memorandum of understanding with these intermediaries to help in terms of as to what extent they can be able to charge, mindful of their need for their own sustainability in terms of where they are managing their own office, acquisition of infrastructure, etc. So those will be fundamental to the new entity going forward. So I just want to really emphasize the fact that no, it will be a paradigm shift from the previous two institutions.
Thank you. Have you exhausted your...
Okay, good.
There was a follow-up.
You see, when you see us being a bit anxious because of the experience that we have had, so when you say SAMAF has improved, I seriously get worried, because it means in relative terms we are looking at different standards. I want to argue that we have not done anything for the poor people with SAMAF and Kuya. Because you see, if we accept that, it will assist us to say what product can we produce which far supersedes what members say was a failure. But if we say SAMAF has improved, it was better, then that will lead us into... I just thought I should caution, you know, on that, because we are your ears and eyes as well. You know, we just that sometimes we sound angry, but otherwise we want to help you to be productive. And also accessibility. People must not struggle. When they want help, they can't find it. When they knock here, they are sent from one office to another office. Because it must also be your duty to follow the people that have come to borrow, to borrow, so that you don't lose the funds, so that you capacitate, you mentor, you monitor things.
I think I thought you would talk about the form they fill in when they are applying for any funding. That it's a booklet you would go through instead of one page a day. The other thing, maybe you are not telling us, there is something you're not telling us about the intermediaries. You keep on saying your target is monkeys, but then we keep on saying that the intermediary, why, if your target is monkeys, why don't you employ people who will go to monkeys? Like in Brazil, where we found that there were people who are using bicycles to go to these monkeys, and they mentor them. When you collect the money, you collect, but you mentor them, those people. Why do you depend so much on the intermediaries if they are not your target? Well, why can't you have people employed by the department to say you'll take a bicycle, you'll visit that one and that one, then you come back, you report? Why, what is the difficulty, particularly as we've got this cooler direct?
Chairperson, let me just start where you've stopped. Because really, that was the issue with me. That I think we've lamented a lot, and we have been lamenting around the performance of Kula and SAMAF, precisely because we stay in these areas. We are not talking from the mountain tops. We are there with the people. We address them more or less on a daily basis and every weekend. They complain, they do everything, we promise, and we come back and we say that we'll take these issues with you. I want to move along with your proposal. You know, the question of reaching out, we'll definitely hold you on your statement, and Mr. Makuba, we'll hold you on a statement that, you will definitely have a paradigm shift with regard to CIFA, because we're not talking for the sake of talking. We're talking because one results. And the issue is accessing the very people who are in need, were crying on a daily basis, were unemployed, were hungry. That's really what we, that's what is making us to be groping in the dark for solutions in your presentations, so that we are in the same wavelength with you. And so the model that the chairperson is referring to, please take it into consideration. Because that model is a tried and tested model, even in one of the renowned institutions right now, Grameen Bank in Bangladesh. So I'm not sure. The interest. Okay, sure. You see, there are good sides and yeah. Absolutely. Grameen Bank and BRAC, and then Grameen Bank in particular has been a model that has been used in various countries, including here in South Africa when the whole process started. And I remember, I think it was Saruji who actually started the process of looking at the, and invited Professor Yunus from Bangladesh to start that institution there in South Africa. And Chairperson, I've been to Grameen Bank myself. I stayed there in the villages for something like a month. And I tell you, staying in the villages in Bangladesh, it's not a nice thing, because there are real challenges of water and stuff like that. But because we wanted to understand this, and the ANC in particular wanted to find solutions right before the unbanning of the ANC as to how we're going to deal with the challenges. And the unfortunate thing is that even when we're sent for those lessons, even now we're still faced with those same challenges. We're faced with those challenges. Send us out to those places, even in Germany, to study Raiffeisen Bank, the village banks of Germany, or the farmers' banks in Germany. How can we put the financial and lending institutions and institutions even close to the farmers? And this is the kind of thing that we are trying to get, and for cooler and summer to do. Subsistence farmers who are out there, they have to travel miles and miles before they can even take the little money they have to the bank. There is no idea of setting up whatever and making those things closer, those facilities closer to them. And yet we talk of entrepreneurial spirit. I think that's what is written here. And promotion of entrepreneurialism. Now, I am saying that the model that the chairperson is likely suggesting from Brazil and places like Grameen Bank and Bangladesh is a model to be looked to. And with the weaknesses, of course, I mean, that Saul is referring to. The question of this question of the interest, we have to find a way of dealing with the interest issue. Because when I listen to you say, I think you are saying 31% and is what you are putting forward and, relative to 50%, and yourselves are really far lower down, and we can actually reduce the chairperson. We have to find a way for reducing it. So we must think very, very hard. If truly what we're serious about what we want to do, we have to reduce it, so that we don't actually make things very difficult for our people. It's something that we must think about. Our business is not about making money, because our business is about managing and throwing back and giving value to the taxpayers on their revenue. So that's why I'm seconding the option of the chairperson. Let's get people who are field workers. Let's create field workers. People must be there. we are not going to crack Free State and Northern Cape with respect. If Mabunu, for instance, was listening to the explanation, there is an application from what's the group? Modiko. There's an application from Modiko. How did it come? We waited for Modiko to come up with application. Okay, good. And but now, let's have many of them said. And the only way, in my view, is to get the model from Limpopo and create cross-pollination, Chairperson, of the groups from Limpopo. Take the very people who are doing it. Get them to go to these places and assist you to show the people how they've done it in Limpopo. I mean, if you get into Toendo, the model that you're actually referring us to, it's a beautiful site. I get excited when I go there. That place, together with Bromosprate, is it Bromosprate? Bromosprate. Those two models. I saw something similar to that. I was driving one day to Masabati, and they are stands on the way. They are not to the same magnitude as this. Those people are in the villages. It's giving livelihood, it's giving hope to those people. And that's exactly what you want. And I think South Africans would be so happy if they find that their own revenue is doing that. And that's it, Jefferson, that I wanted to make. The last issue is the question of the conditions and of these loans and with the platforms. And I think we have to make things relatively easy for people, especially now that we're talking about direct lending.
Okay. Thank you, Babu Ngonyama. I think we have to approach our closing, but I will after the response, if there are any, I would like Baba Levin to have your parting shots, and Comrade Sue, you will have on behalf of. That if there are any responses of what have been said before, we get to the
okay. Baba Mamat.
I think the reason why the chairperson is giving that floor to Sue is because they have a thing. Maybe on the
okay. Well, thank you, Chair. These issues are very. Difficult issues, to be honest. And I give you my honest opinion and my own from the bottom of my heart. We are. I grew up in a DFI environment, the Development Finance Institution, and I come from these areas that we're talking about in terms of poverty so it's really my objective, and certainly it was with the team at SAMAF I'm talking about people that are very passionate about trying to make this thing happen. Unfortunately, it took time, but I'm very, very hopeful that CIFA is going to take the baton further and make sure that these things are achieved. I must say, Modiko, for instance, I drove from Pretoria with I was the chief executive. He was the chief CEO. We drove to Lesotho to go and talk to the Modiko is in Lesotho. Go and talk to them to come and establish in South Africa, and. Because of the language, they eventually agreed. We pushed them. We worked with them until they've now set up in South Africa, and now we're going to do the funding. It's really we are pushing very hard, and I'm very confident that Takane is going to do exactly that with his team.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, mine is just a comment, some parting shot that we have noted the available input that we have received from the honorable members, and then it's a huge lesson learned for us today being here. And then the strategy for CIFA will always evolve over time. We'll always be looking for innovative ways of doing business to make it simple to our end users. While we might be continuing in the over the short to medium term in terms of using intermediaries as a vehicle to reach our end users, over time we'll always look at the possibility of the proposal that we've made. You know, why don't you then look for the field workers, for example, to go down over the, on the ground to reach those that are affected the most. It would evolve over the years. And then, yes, you indicated, Honorable, that you will hold me accountable. And yes, indeed, that, I agree with that. And then I think that that is a fair assessment of what I've said. And I indicated that, no, indeed, over time, you will be able to see I'm saying over time. I wouldn't want to say, no, we are giving. We come 3 months down the line. When, I mean, we are left with 4 or 5 months to the end of the financial year when we're going to be coming this time to do the report. You will be saying that, no, you what you have said 5 months ago. And I just want to qualify by saying that, no, over time, really, indeed, you will be able to see. It has to change. Yeah. But I will thank you so much from my side for the input.
Thank you, Madam Mabavala.
Let me come in. 25 years ago, Muhammad Yunus stood up and said, poverty will be in history. It will be history. It will be in museums. That's what people will see. There's been a lot of recent work done that shows that the approach that was taken by Grameen Bank and by this model that was promoted by the Grameen Bank model was not lifting people out of poverty. They've been charged interest rates that are double what the maximum under the MCR is in South Africa. So it's not a model that we believe is sustainable, and there's a lot of thinking that's being done around how do you assist people to get out of poverty, and that's our primary objective. And promoting the idea of being this entrepreneur and getting this loan and then being able to pay it back and lift yourself out of poverty is something that we've seen there are case studies of individuals that have been able to achieve that, but by and large, it's not what's happened across the world in Mexico, in Bangladesh, in India, in a whole range in some South American countries. We've seen collapses of these financial institutions over time because it's not a sustainable model. So what we're looking at is, and we recognize the portfolio committee has raised it time and again, and also with our own understanding from seeing what happens on the ground, is that charging very high interest rates are not sustainable. You have to sell a hell of a lot of tomatoes or smileys in order to pay back those very high interest rates. The problem, of course, is that we need a model that is going to help the organizations that do this micro-enterprise lending to be sustainable. And that's where we've been working on trying to come up with an approach with CIFA and with the sector as a whole, because there's a lot of work that we've been engaging with the key players in the sector. We had a meeting with them a few months ago. There's another meeting this week to look at how do we move forward on these issues. And the key issue is around a subsidy model that says, because we know that if you want to be sustainable but you're employing 100 field workers, you're going to have to charge these very high interest rates. So how do we make sure that we provide a subsidy model as the government through CIFA using state resources to make sure that poor people get assisted with affordable interest rates? So we're looking at that type of approach because we know that if poor people are going to get themselves out of poverty with microfinance, then it has to be done at affordable interest rates and not 120% interest rates that we see in Bangladesh and Mexico and Chile and a range of other countries. So we've given the mandate to CIFA, and they know they've got work to do, and there's a lot that needs to happen around getting that model right and engaging with the organizations in the sector. And the reality is, why do we use intermediaries in the sector, but we still see the microfinance enterprise as our client, so that we don't lose focus on who the client is, but we recognize that those intermediaries, those NGOs, can do it a lot more affordable, in a lot more affordable way than government can, and have much greater reach, because that's our other priority. It's not only the interest rates, it's also making sure that we have as broad a reach as possible. So when an MFI has 25 offices around a province or in two or three different provinces, it means that they can, at a much better rate and a much more affordable rate, be part of those communities and give access to finance to those communities. So it's a model that still continues for the micro enterprise, but it means that we must make it work and must build a much closer relationship between EDD, CIFA, and those micro enterprises, so that we can partner with them to make sure that we get better interest rates and greater reach and footprint. And finally, I mean, when we did a review of CUDA and SAMF as a precursor to establishment of CIFA, we knew there were problems. I mean, it comes through, it's very evident in the performances. We're not hiding that. The needs for this country and what CUDA was able to do in terms of the number of businesses financed and what SAMF, even though we said the performance was improved, we know that it's not what this country needs. We support what the new CEO is saying in terms of the paradigm shift. And the one thing that I did forget to mention is that he's been seconded for a 3-year period. So he's not coming in and coming out. He's there to provide stability for a 3-year period. So you will see him here next year. And he will then have to account in that performance. We know that there's been teething, as Willie has said, in the first couple of months of CIFA, but we're looking forward now that the institution is stabilizing, they've got a permanent CEO, they've got new office premises, all the regional offices have integrated, they've got a strategic plan that the board has signed off, they now need to start running. So the first two quarters' performance were better than what CUDA and SANF did combined last year, but we know that we need that paradigm shift and the much greater ramping up. And from the side of the department, we are monitoring, engaging on a regular basis, and we do get monitoring reports, and we would like to come on a regular basis like we used to previously and report to the portfolio committee on the performance of the institution. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir, about that. We will be with you. Madam Su?
It's not often that I get the opportunity to do closing remarks, so I'm going to take full advantage. Thank you. First of all, yes, as a well-known South African politician once said at the end of the third day of his speech, and now to conclude my opening remarks, he shall remain nameless. I just wanted to say that in many ways it's a little bit unfair, some of the questions we asked, because the brief given to our presenters was to deal with CUDA and SAMF, and it was essentially a closing down, and what we were asking were questions about the future. But I think it's worthwhile, because I think when the team come back, we can expect them to give us the answers to the kind of questions we're asking. And those are, what's happening on the ground? How much progress are we making? Are people getting loans? Are people being lifted out of poverty? These are the things that concern us as representatives of the people. And so I think it's been a useful exercise. I think we're all satisfied that SAMF and CUDA are duly and properly wrapped up and that we can now move on to the next phase. I do think that there are a couple of things that we need to say. And the first one is, there's two facets to this, represented by the two groups here. The one, micro and finance, is the question of lifting people out of poverty, as you have mentioned. And the other side is, of course, growing and sustaining small businesses. And I, for one, have not seen enough of that, because it's all very well to supply a little bit of sustenance to a woman selling vegetables on the side of the road. But what about the younger person who doesn't want to sell vegetables forever but go to a supermarket? These are the kinds of questions that we need to ask. Let me say, there is a generation of people that will never get out of that that cycle of micro-enterprise. But we must also look very carefully at the ones who have the ability and the chance to do that, the young entrepreneurs. I think I often quote the example that my own grandfather was a gardener. My mother got an education, and the family never looked back. He was a gardener. He tended someone's garden. It can happen. It needs the education. It needs the kind of support that it happens in one generation if we can just pull ourselves together on this matter. And I think that pulling people out of poverty is a key aspect, and some of the stories that we've heard here today about that happening are really good. But to me, we need to get right the model to take people from a small business to something bigger, and the real entrepreneur into something really quite big. I also think I would like to support my colleagues who talk about the... I told you I was going to take this disadvantage, but I wanted to talk about the field workers. This society is full of field workers, full of, in every different facet of life. Community development workers, for example, they're all over the country at the grassroots level doing work. Can they not also be capacitated at one level to engage in this kind of activity? They're doing home care in some instances, and they're focused on different things. But it should be part of their work, and it should be part of the work of counselors, in my view, to actually be down there understanding what people want and providing with them the information that they need. So I don't think we need a whole other tier of community workers. We need to use the ones that we've got more effectively. That is just my own personal view, because I think if you gave the community workers a bicycle, that would actually be part of their job. But thank you very much to all the people who've come here. I think there's a great deal of agreement that the merging of these two organizations and the establishment of this organization is really going to take us to the next level. In a year's time, we will get answers, I'm sure, to the questions we've asked today. And hopefully, we will be in a new phase of both the global economic crisis. Things would have started looking up by then, says she confidently, but also in providing the kind of support that we need to the people in our country. So thank you very much indeed for your presentation.
Thank you, Comrade Sue. We've come to the end of our engagement. We can say the other thing is coordination. So, the coordination, I don't think you ever talk to the social development. Because when you talk about stock fairs, and the social development also do something there, but you don't talk to each other. They come alone and they do their own thing, and then so economic development comes, but we are the one government. We need to have that coordination, particularly the other thing, we are national, but our constituency is a ward in the local municipality. Why can't we go together to that ward and say, all of us, we own this project? I think we need that, particularly this department, the Economic Development Department, is there to coordinate and to make policies and economic development planning. So let's plan these things. If we are going to a ward, let's go together with social development so that we don't have cracks and stop working in silos. Thank you very much. We'll keep in touch with our secretary. Baba Mabas, excuse me, as apologize for not being well. We dragged him here. In fact, he wanted to go to the doctor, but we said because of our numbers, let's keep him for a while. Now he's not feeling well. Maybe you've seen him. You think, no, it's not respecting this committee. No, he was not feeling well. Thank you very much, and the meeting is...
Also, you must get a website. That's what I mean to say. There's no legal website.
Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.